Good afternoon, everybody. This is DJ Powers on radio.dominican.edu, where we talk everything comics all the time. You guys know the drill. This is our last week together, unfortunately, and it brings a tear to my eye, but we're going to get through it like any other week. Well, not necessarily like any other week. This week we're going to go through... this is an indulgence week for me. I have been talking about how I wanted to do Guardians of the Galaxy and talk about why that is my favorite movie to ever exist. I want to talk about why I love it, the impact that it's had, and what it's done for Marvel as a whole and comic book movies as a whole. And, you know, there were some certain weeks where I would say I was going to do it, and then certain things would get in the way, or not necessarily get in the way, but other news stories would come up that I would think were important. Like, there was the one week where I talked about the whole Chelsea Kane Mockingbird incident and the awful things that were happening to her, and the passing of Steve Dillon, and stories like that. So, and then Doctor Strange was one week, so of course I had to talk about Doctor Strange. But, so there were a lot of things that made me think, well, as much as I want to do this, I should definitely talk about these things and shed a light on them, which I did. But now that's the final week, nothing insane has happened this week, luckily. No movies have been released, nothing like that. So I figured this, what better way to end our 10 weeks together than for me to talk about my favorite movie, favorite comic book movie. And we're going to do just that. But the one thing I won't change is the weekly stack. We do the weekly stack every week. And we're going to go over what I think is worth your dollar or what is not worth your dollar. So, more or less. And these are my favorite books of the week. And actually, no independent books really blew me away. Or not necessarily didn't blow me away. But there was nothing that I really felt were more high profile than what we have this week. It was mostly just... it was actually all Marvel or DC. And really awesome books this week. So we're going to do Marvel first. We only got two Marvel books. Amazing Spider-Man number 21. So obviously, I'm a sucker for Spider-Man. This is yet another tie-in to the clone conspiracy storyline. This issue is running in the mainline Spider-Man series, and each issue's been highlighting a different supporting player in the Spider-Man mythos and has been making us aware of what's been going on outside of Peter Parker's, well, within Peter Parker's circle, but not necessarily beknownst to him. And this week follows Kane Parker, who is one of the two most prominent clones of Peter Parker to ever exist. And he started as a villain years back during the Clone Conspiracy saga with the Jackal. He was made by the Jackal. And he started as a villain, but then one thing led to another, and he was resurrected along the way again after dying. Yada yada, like a decade of comic book stories. But all you need to know is he came back. He had a bit of heroic stint. He changed his ways, and he became the superhero, the Scarlet Spider, yet another spider superhero swinging around. And recently, he's been passed away. He died in the Spider-Verse event when they were fighting the Inheritors, when all of the Spider-Man across the multiverse had to band together. And now we get to see how he came back, what he's been up to, and what kind of major role he has to play in the world of the Clone Conspiracy. And this issue is written by Dan Slott, like major plot points, but since he's busy with the Clone Conspiracy, Christos Gage, who has been the unsung hero of the Spider-Man world, the publishing line these past few years, who has been helping Dan Slott out a lot. He's an awesome writer. He's here to help Dan Slott. He does a lot of the scripting, like the speaking lines and all that, and he's given us the meat of what's happening to Kane. Artist Giuseppe Camuncoli, who has been the Spider-Man mainstay for the past couple years. He's been awesome. They're giving us this tie-in tale. We get to see what Kane's been up to. It's actually, of all things, a zombie story. So it's a bit of a post-Halloween horror vibe for you guys, if that's what you want. And he's also hopping around the multiverse. So we get to see what, personally, my favorite supporting character of the Spider-Man mythos outside of Peter Parker. He's my favorite. Kane Parker's awesome. I've loved the hero seeking, former villain seeking redemption type storyline he's been doing. The steps he's been taking to become a hero have been awesome. I also just love his scarlet red with black, you know, just dual color costume. It looks so cool. Has these awesome red eyes on this black face mask. It's awesome. And I think it's amazing. And Kane Parker's awesome. He's Peter Parker. He's a clone, so he has all the powers of Spider-Man. But he is tweaked to be just a little bit stronger. So he's basically, if Spider-Man, who can already lift 10 tons on his own, was jacked on, like, not, he's not physically bigger, but power-wise, if he was just jacked on, like, some crazy steroids or something, that would be Kane Parker. And he's a bit of a hard ass. And he's, what if the tagline that has always been associated with Kane Parker ever since he became the new Scarlet Spider is all of the power, none of the responsibility. So it's almost not a better Spider-Man tale, but it's more of a heart-pounding and kind of stressful Spider-Man story whenever you have Kane Parker involved, because you know that he has all of Peter Parker's great power, but we don't know what he's going to do with it because we don't know how responsible Kane Parker necessarily is. So I'm excited for Amazing Spider-Man 21. Awesome tie-in issue. And I believe our next tie-in issue is the resurrected Gwen Stacy. So that's going to be a crazy one, because along with Ben Parker, Peter Parker's Uncle Ben, and Bruce Wayne's parents, Gwen Stacy is one of those characters that you just don't bring back. You shouldn't bring back, but she's back. So we're going to see what the heck happens. And I'm nervous. But anyway, our next Marvel book is Doctor Strange number 14, written by Jason Aaron. I've sung his praise before, with art by Chris Bocciolo. And this is fitting because I just talked about Doctor Strange last week. And this issue is really awesome because Jason Aaron is starting a new storyline where, what if all of Doctor Strange's classic villains, so Baron Mordo, Dormammu, Satana, Shuma-Gorath, I think, is going to be in there. And that's pretty nuts. What if they all came back and one by one tried to take down Doctor Strange? And that's insane. So Doctor Strange is getting put through this gauntlet right now. And this issue is Doctor Strange attempting to escape hell itself, because Satana is the daughter of Satan, and she has captured Doctor Strange and is attempting to make him go insane and or die within the bowels of hell. And is Doctor Strange using his magic prowess to escape this awful realm? And this is just one of those issues, you know, with the art from Chris and the writing from Jason. You can really tell that these guys had a lot of fun with it. You know, there are scenes, not really spoilers, but there's, you know, it's in hell, so you think it's going to be a serious story, but there are scenes where Doctor Strange has to go into his astral spirit form, but for whatever reason, he can only do it while naked. So it's like, it's just goofy, like Chris Bocciolo's finding all these creative and, like, funny ways to cover up Strange as he's fighting all these demons butt naked, and it's really hilarious, and you can tell Jason Aaron's having a good time writing these for Chris to draw, and it's just one of those issues where the fun that they're having is really infectious, and that's why I love it, and that's why I want to suggest it to you guys today, because we need a little bit of fun in our lives, and Doctor Strange is certainly one of those books. So if you want some Marvel magic, if Doctor Strange really got you and you want more magic, then the movie, I mean, then hop over to the comics and get Doctor Strange number 14, because all of the classic villains are coming back. So this is definitely a good crash course on the world of Doctor Strange and the kind of people that hex Doctor Strange with their evil magics and whatnot. So definitely read Doctor Strange number 14 by Jason Aaron and Chris Bocciolo from Marvel Comics. And we're hopping into DC Comics now, and I'm going to start off with a bit not unexpected for me, because I've known for a while, at least for me personally, how cool this character is. But he's been kind of the butt of a lot of jokes in not only the world of comics, but just outside of comics. He's one of those characters whose reputation, his false reputation, has preceded him, and everyone really writes him off. But Aquaman is one of those characters, and his volume right now from Dan Abnett and Philip Briones is on double art duty with Brad Hennessy, and this Aquaman series is awesome. Aquaman is being presented no longer as a joke, and that's a good thing. Dan Abnett is the writer, and Dan Abnett is awesome. He's recently written my favorite Hercules series in recent memory. Hercules is one of my favorite characters from Marvel, and Dan wrote a stellar Hercules series. It was only 6 issues. It sucked, and then there was a 4-issue miniseries for Civil War II, which was a not good event. I won't get into it. But Dan Abnett's awesome. And Dan Abnett is also famous for being a part of the DNA writing team, Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. And they're famous for bringing the Guardians of the Galaxy into the modern era. So it's really fitting that I'm highlighting a Dan Abnett book today. And Dan Abnett is following the footsteps of titans of the industry. And I mean titans. Like Geoff Johns, who is the DC creative officer and one of the greatest writers in the business. And Jeff Parker, who's one of my favorites, who's written one of my favorite volumes ever in Marvel's Thunderbolts. And he's following in the footsteps of those guys. And Geoff Johns, Jeff Parker, and now Dan Abnett have been taking great strides successfully in making Aquaman more of a force to be reckoned with within not necessarily the DC universe, but just the fandom, you know, and making him no longer a joke. And there's a lot of amazing intrigue there because, you know, there's this political bent to it because he's the king of a nation and he's trying to unite two worlds, the surface world and the sea world. There's a lot of crazy action from that ranges from the bottom of the seafloor up to the skies, I believe, because I believe there's an issue. There is an issue where he fights Superman, and it's pretty crazy. And it's not just an Aquaman book. It's a wonderful dual lead book because Aquaman and the love of his life, Mira, and Mira is an awesome supporting character in the world of Aquaman. She is this take no prisoners, I'm not going to take anyone's S-H-I-T, Queen of Atlantis, and she sometimes gives Aquaman a run for his money as the most badass character in the Aquaman book. So it sometimes makes you wonder, maybe this should be Aquaman and Mira, or Mira and Aquaman, because Dan Abnett really writes a powerful Mira, and it's not like one character could exist without the other, but having Aquaman and Mira bounce off each other highlights the strengths of both characters, and it's this, you can tell there's love there, and that really makes it awesome, and you love to see these two work together and go through their highs and lows together. And they are currently under fire from Black Manta and the military strike force dedicated to take down Aquaman called NEMO. I can't remember what the acronym stands for because there's like 60 acronyms in comics now. But there's been some good Finding Nemo jokes, and it's hilarious. And Aquaman's really good. So please take my word for it. Don't think Aquaman's a joke. It's a good series. But you know what's no joke? Penguin Radio. For those of you just tuning in, this is Penguin Radio. This is DJ Powers. I'm between the panels with radio.dominican.edu. We're here every week. This is my final show with you guys, and we talk everything comics all the time on Between the Panels. And right now we're in the middle of our weekly stack. And in the middle of that stack is Batman number 11 by Tom King and Michael Janin. And it feels like every week I've been talking about a Batman book, and that's because Batman books are the best. And, you know, it's no secret to me, and it should be no secret to you guys, should be no surprise, really, I should say, that Batman is a popular character, and when writers write Batman, they're going to bring their A game, because if you do Batman wrong, then you're letting down thousands of people. And Batman is one of those, this volume right now is proving itself to be one of those landmark Batman runs, and Tom King is giving us a story of Batman on his assault on Santa Prisca. We're right in the middle of the assault in Santa Prisca with Batman and his newly formed Suicide Squad. And there's twists and turns on every page. And the question remains, will Batman and the Suicide Squad break Bane's back? So there's this trope going on throughout the series. It's really this story arc that's really awesome. Batman is presenting himself as this force of nature, and he has Bane on these comm links or whatever, and he keeps saying, I'm going to break your damn back. And it sent chills down my spine when he first did it, because for those of you who don't know, the history between Bane and Batman is Bane is the only villain who's been successful in stopping the Batman. And he has proved himself to be just as intelligent as Batman, but even stronger. And there was a famous storyline called Nightfall. And Bane just picked it. It was like a WWE move. Bane picked up Batman and just broke his back over his knee. And it was insane. And it shocked everyone at the time because, you know, no one thought Batman could be beat. And then he got beat really bad. And so they're hearkening back to that continuity and that storyline. And they are giving us the story where Batman is on a mission to break Bane's damn back. And I'm really excited because when Batman's mad, you get good Batman. So I'm really excited. Batman is, of course, leading his own hand-picked Suicide Squad. And it's really interesting to see the characters that he picked. He has Bronze Tiger, Catwoman, Punch and Julie, and the Ventriloquist. And it is some crazy stuff. So I'm not going to spoil anything that just happened in this issue because, wow. But go read Batman number 11. Please go read Batman number 11. And the last book that we have on the weekly stack today is, of course, I've been singing this series' praises, Superman number 11 by Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason. And this is the second chapter in the story arc, In the Name of the Father. And it highlights more, of course, Superman's in the book, but it's more highlighting on Superman's son, John. And this storyline is basically it's a precursor to the upcoming series next year called Super Sons that's going to follow John, Superboy, and Damian Wayne, the son of Batman, who are going to be a super team as the two young sons of the two greatest superheroes in the DC Universe. And this storyline follows these two characters who don't get along, John and Damian, and Batman and Superman say, okay, you know what? We need to make sure that these guys know what they stand for. They have to earn the symbols on their chests. So what do? They throw them into this crazy gauntlet, and they have to learn how to work together or not be superheroes at all. And it's the kind of fun and the kind of family-oriented fun that just really brings a smile to your face. And it's the kind of smile on your face that Superman should put on your face. And it's really amazing. And, you know, I've said it before, you know, the past couple years of Superman have been really dark and really dour. But this most recent volume of Superman and the future is looking really, really bright. And I couldn't be happier with the direction Superman's going in. We have classic Superman back in the fold, and it's really beautiful and it's really amazing. And I could not be more excited for what Superman is bringing to the table. Peter Tomasi is doing an amazing job. He's an amazing writer. And Patrick Gleason's art is some of my favorite in DC Comics stable. And Superman number 11, there you go. Worth your $3, worth all 300 cents that you could spend on Superman. And that was our weekly stack for this week, our final week. And when we get back, I'm going to go on a break real quick. When we get back, we're finally going to get into this movie that I've been talking about. And we're going to talk about it for the rest of today. So I'll see you guys when we get back. Goodness, we're back, and I could not be more excited. The levels just spiked there, but I'm pumped because this movie means the world to me. Guardians of the Galaxy, for those of you just tuning in on radio.dominican.edu, this is Between the Panels. I'm DJ Powers, and we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, greatest movie to ever exist, and we're just gonna get into it. This is the final film of Marvel's whole quote unquote Phase 2 movie slate, and so the kind of history behind this film, I guess you could say, is so obviously Iron Man was a big hit, and that made Marvel think, okay, well shoot, we got to go through our huge plan now. We're gonna activate. We're gonna hit the big red button. We're gonna make all these movies, and we're gonna blow the world away. And as the movie slate, you know, as we were going down the line through the years, and the movies were being announced, you know, really given ones were presented to us. Like, we got Captain America, of course. We got Thor. We got the Hulk. That was before Iron Man, but either way, you know, really expected films. We got Iron Man 2. We got The Avengers, which was amazing in of itself. And, you know, then that was really successful, and Marvel goes, okay, well, we're going to have a Phase 2, and there's going to be even more stuff, and it's going to be insane. And so everyone's like, okay, sweet, so we're just going to get sequels to all the Marvel movies that we got before. So, you know, we got Captain America, the First Avenger. We got Thor, the Dark World. We got Iron Man 3. We got, what else is in there? I think it was just, so we got those. Those were being announced, those three films. And then all of a sudden, Marvel goes, hey, we're also going to have a movie called Guardians of the Galaxy. And collectively across the world, all of the Marvel fans went, huh? It was a big shock, but not a shock like everyone's freaking out, but just everyone was really baffled. Because at this time, you have to put yourself in the mindset of, you know, 2011 when this movie was announced, right? And all these people are like, okay, we're going to get all the big, big title Marvel films. You know, there should probably be Iron Man 4 and then, like, Captain America 3, which we did get. There's probably going to be, you know, Thor up to 4, you know, Thor 10, Hawkeye movie maybe, Black Widow. Maybe we'll get a Hulk movie. You know, all these givens. But then, yeah, so Marvel's like, so the final movie before Age of Ultron is we're going to have Guardians of the Galaxy. And, yeah, so everyone had their collective, like, big question mark moment. And so putting yourself into the mindset of the people at this time, if you weren't growing up with Marvel Comics, and even then, if you weren't growing up with Marvel Comics plus growing up with Guardians of the Galaxy, you really didn't know who these guys were. And the concept itself of Guardians of the Galaxy has always been really fluid. Like, if you want to get technical, the original Guardians of the Galaxy harken back to the 70s when it was this collection of aliens from the year 3000. And it was this Captain America type guy, Vance Astro, who was this Air Force pilot who was frozen in ice but in space. And he became like the Captain America of space in the year 3000. There was this guy called Martin X, who was just this, he looked like Iceman, but he had the power to do like heat and ice. There was Charlie 31, who was basically the Hulk of the Guardians 3000. There was Yondu, who was this blue guy with this big red fish fin and magical bow and arrows. So it was just like wacky stuff. So when they were like, oh, we're doing Guardians of the Galaxy, everyone was like, how does that tie in to what you got going on now? And B, how are you going to go from Captain America the Winter Soldier, which was this deep political intrigue movie, and say, hey, we got Guardians of the Galaxy year 3000, we have these space aliens? So it was just like this big jump, and everyone thought it was going to suck. But then Marvel said, hey, we're actually going to do the concept on the modern Guardians made popular by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. And that was a team comprised of mostly familiars now. But so Star-Lord, who before this time with the Guardians, complete nobody, literally. Rocket Raccoon, who had made his appearance in The Incredible Hulk years ago, and was never seen since. Groot, who is actually a Jack Kirby creation of all things from the 50s, from like a Monster Tales sort of anthology book. And so people, even then people were like, who's Groot? Adam Warlock, who was a classic Jim Starlin creation from Marvel Cosmic. There was Mantis, who was going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, but we're going to get there. So it was a more modern take that people knew more, but still it was weird. So it was just this – in all of Marvel's surefire hits, like even – you know, I always talk about the Thor movies because they're good, but as a whole, if you look at Marvel titles collectively, the Thor films have been the weakest. But even if they're the weakest, they're still, you know, fun comic book movies. And they could be awful films, but they would still make millions and millions of dollars. But Guardians of the Galaxy was that first film in all of Marvel's upcoming films for everyone to just think, I think Marvel's going to have their first box office flop, and they're going to learn their lesson. And to be honest, I thought that too, because no one knew who these people were. So that was the history of this. And then it came to getting a director, choosing actors, and then not only choosing actors and a director, but how is it going to tie into a Marvel film mandate to make people interested? And then, A, how are you going to get people to want to buy a ticket to go see the movie? So director hunt was on, and then after a while, they finally got James Gunn, who... I'll talk about it in depth later, but he was the absolute perfect pick. You know, you learn once you see the movie. Once you see the movie, like everything leading up to this film, even with all this cool stuff that was coming out, like even after all the cool trailers, everything was a question mark. Like you didn't know if this movie was going to stick the landing, or you didn't know if it was going to be the biggest piece of garbage in Marvel's like whole film slate. And it was just weird. It was a weird time. Everyone was questioning this film. Everyone was questioning Marvel's sanity because they took these nobodies. But again, so James Gunn, whose previous directing efforts were, I believe, Teeth, which is that movie about the slugs that come up in the bathroom, and it's like a horror movie, and then Super, which was, if you've seen Kick-Ass, and that's like the superheroes in the modern world thing, to me, don't tell anybody, but to me, Super is Kick-Ass but better, because it's a parody of these superhero tropes. But Kick-Ass had a problem. It was a great film, but Kick-Ass had a problem where it became what it was parodying. But Super was always just this hilarious parody with still some great character moments and some awesome actors. And those were two of James Gunn's like biggest films, quote unquote, because they weren't really big films. They were both indie movies. And so everyone's like, okay. Like, okay, Marvel, we'll let you do what you want to do. And then so we had to get actors. So James Gunn was on the hunt. And the actors. So again, when I'm, you know, you have, oh, what movie is I going to compare? So you have, yeah, you have the Avengers, where all these actors and, you know, Doctor Strange. I'm talking about Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange was this movie where I praised, like, oh, my God, they have all these high-profile actors. They have Mads Mikkelsen. They have Benedict Cumberbatch, Tilda Swinton, Benedict Wong, Chiwetel Ejiofor. You know, you have all these high-profile actors that are going to get people who are just fans of these actors into the movie. But then Guardians of the Galaxy, when they finally like nailed down all the actors, but as each one was coming out, everyone was kind of like, okay, who? You know, it fit though. Like it fit this whole team of nobodies thing that we had going on. And you know, these actors were insane, like in terms of, other than Bradley Cooper, because Bradley Cooper's Bradley Cooper, but he voiced Rocket Raccoon. Like his face wasn't even the movie. He voiced an animated character. So you kind of forget that Bradley Cooper is even in the movie. But so we have, you know, Vin Diesel as Groot. So even if you're like coming from the Fast and Furious films, which is really the only thing you can love Vin Diesel from, even if you're coming from those, Vin Diesel's playing a character whose only lines are a combination of the words I am and Groot. So, and that's an animated character again. So even if you like Vin Diesel, you're just going to get a walking tree guy. And then so Zoe Saldana is introduced as Gamora. And Zoe Saldana is awesome. She's a badass in every right, in real life and in the movie. And so she's been in a couple action movies before that. And, you know, she's proved herself as this really strong female character type actor. And it's awesome. And we got Zoe Saldana. I was like, okay, we're getting there. And then the next two casting calls blew my mind. There was Dave Bautista, who is a WWE. And so WWE people, aside from Dwayne The Rock Johnson, aren't necessarily the greatest actors. And Dave Bautista comes in. He says, hey, I'm going to be in this big Marvel movie. And I'm going to be Drax the Destroyer, who's one of the, like, the biggest characters in the movie. And, like, that's mind-blowing, right? And then Chris Pratt gets announced as Star-Lord. And at the time, Chris Pratt was not a fit guy. You know, his nickname used to be Fat Pratt. So Chris Pratt gets introduced as Star-Lord, and that was when everyone's hands went up in the air. They're just like, what is happening with this movie? And then so – but then before the movie came out, and this quote that I'm going to share really, like, speaks to the power of Chris Pratt, and I'm going to talk about it later when I get into, like, the movie itself, you know, the not the before stuff. But so this was before the movie came out. This was in April 2013, right before the movie came out in August that year. And James Gunn's movie was not Teeth, it was Sliver. It just hit me, so I don't want to give you guys wrong info. But anyway, so everyone was talking about Chris Pratt, and everyone was kind of not questioning it to the point where everyone thought it was going to tank, but just like, we need some answers. Why is Fat Pratt in a superhero movie where usually our leads are these nice, like, fit, like, ripped guys? And I'm not saying big guys can't be superheroes, but, you know, Hollywood usually has its preferences and whatever, so it was just unexpected. So James Gunn says, everybody knows Chris Pratt is in the movie, and I saw maybe 80 to 100 guys read for the actor for the character of Peter Quill. I was very specific that I wanted to be somebody really extraordinary. I really had Robert Downey Jr. in mind a lot. You had this guy who came in and inhabited the character of Tony Stark. When you first see Tony Stark, he blows your mind, and you can't believe what you were seeing. I knew that I needed somebody to blow my mind in that way. We saw a lot of very famous guys in the role, a lot of very well-known people, and very, very good actors. We saw a lot of good performances, but it wasn't until Chris came in and he read, and I said, oh my God, this guy has his own very particular, amazing take on the character that blew my mind, and it blew me away. Then I thought, this is the first guy I could see sharing the screen with Robert Downey Jr. and giving him a run for his money. And so that quote really, you know, we hadn't really seen Chris Pratt act in the movie before this, aside from a couple trailers after this news came out, and then that year at Comic-Con, so about a year before the movie. And, you know, that really made people feel better, but still, no one really knew until they saw the movie. And then, so speaking of seeing the movie, so August 2014 finally rolls around, and I'm obviously really ready for the next Marvel movie, but I'm not sure how ready I am for Guardians of the Galaxy. And I remember this pretty clear as day. So I get into the movie, and, you know, the movie's starting, it's like this. And I was I was sitting in the chair, and I was ready, and I turned to my friend Kyle, who is my Marvel movie guy, and we saw Doctor Strange together. We see every movie together. I remember turning to him, and I remember saying, this has got to be good. And then, so the movie starts. It's finally out, August 2014. The opening scene, it's dark. It's raining. It has this really deep, like, brooding music. Chris Pratt has his Star-Lord mask on, and, you know, it's like, oh, he's walking in this dark temple with, like, skulls and, like, cobwebs and all this stuff hanging. And you think, like, oh, dang. Like, it's more serious than we thought. And then he takes the mask off. He, out of his pocket, pulls a Walkman. And I obviously haven't seen a Walkman since I was born. But, like, even before, like, you know, the people older than me seeing this movie were like, I haven't seen a Walkman since Walkmans died. So it was funny to see a Walkman. So he pulls this Walkman out, puts those orange stuffy headphones over his ears, hits the play button, and then of all songs, Come and Get Your Love by Redbone starts playing. And it, like, he just does these, like, goofy hip movements, and then it zooms out, and you see him dancing in the bottom left corner. and in big, bright yellow text, as if to proclaim to the world, we're finally here and we're going to blow your minds, Guardians of the Galaxy gets slapped onto the screen. And I remember, like, it got me right there. You know, I knew right then and there that I was going to have the best time of my life watching this movie. And I remember right there just having the biggest, I was like ear to ear, biggest smile on my face. And I knew I was in for the best ride of my life. And I turned to my friend Kyle and I said, dude, it's good. it was like a quick 1 minute review, but it was good. Like, I only had to see a minute of the movie to know. And so the film just keeps going on, and it gets better as I watch it in this first viewing. And all expectations for this movie got blown away. And speaking of expectations getting blown away, you're listening to Penguin Radio on radio.dominica.edu. This is DJ Powers. I'm between the panels, and we talk everything comics all the time. And we're having my indulgence week finally, talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. And, geez, like, this movie. And this movie came at a good time for me. You know, it was right before my senior year of high school, and I – you know, you always have those big culture shock kind of moments of, you know, you question where your life is headed, or not in like a bad way, but just what's going to happen after high school. Like, I've known what I've known, and I've been comfortable with it for years, but now things are going to change and I might not belong anymore, whatever. And this movie just hits on these awesome themes, and it's just so touching on, you know, the themes of this movie are about family and what it means to belong and what it means to have a purpose in the world. And, you know, that's exemplified through the characters. It's exemplified through the actions they take and the things they say. And it's exemplified through the music. And so this movie plays out, and it's, you know, it's Chris Pratt ends up getting this MacGuffin kind of thing, this orb that everyone wants. And, you know, the story, admittedly, is, you know, the terms of plot, you know, you could write any action movie about what Guardians of the Galaxy does. But it's about these characters. You know, it's more so than any other Marvel movie. And that's not saying any other Marvel movie is bad, because the best thing about these Marvel movies are the characters. And so more so than any other movie is you get into the heart of these characters. You know, we open with this scene of, you know, Peter Quill as a child. He's listening to I'm Not in Love by 10CC, and, you know, his mom passes away on the hospital bed, and him not being able to take his mother's hand as she's passing away because he's too hurt by her leaving him, you know, whether it's her, you know, it's not her fault, obviously, but he doesn't know that he's a child, you know, that informs a lot of the actions that he takes throughout the rest of his life and throughout the movie. And, you know, this movie is mostly about Peter Quill and his acceptance with those feelings and being able to love again and have a family again and be able to put his well-being in the hands of others. And, you know, you can feel the love come through the film when all these people are working on it, especially because of, in terms of people working on it, the music. So James Gunn had this vision of, I'm going to have this movie. If this is going to be the oddball Marvel movie and, you know, it's going to be different, let's make it different. So he had this vision to have the movie be centered around these misfits, and then these misfits, their lives, you know, throughout the course of this film would be dictated by this music. And, you know, all of the big scenes are driven by these songs, handpicked and meticulously analyzed by James Gunn. You know, these are all 70s and early 80s songs, and it's beautiful. Like, I've never seen a movie use music the same way Guardians of the Galaxy uses music. From the beginning scene using I'm Not in Love with 10CC, to the scene where Come and Get Your Love by Redbone comes on, up to when Fooled Around and Fell in Love by Elvin Bishop comes on, when Peter and Gamora are dancing together, and then when Ooh Child by the Five Stair Steps comes on at the very end, I Want You Back by the Jackson 5, Ain't No Mountain High Enough by Marvin Gaye. Like, all these amazing songs where even if in a movie where the songs were just put in as, you know, kind of bed music, like background music, they would be amazing soundtrack. But this movie uses them as driving points, and, like, they really drive home the emotions and the themes of these films, of what's going on. And James Gunn got, like, he had this list of first choices for, if I want the perfect playlist for this movie to really get these scenes, I need these songs. And Marvel said, you know what, James, you got them. So he got every single first pick that he could have ever wanted. And, you know, it's really awesome. Like, one of the biggest selling points of this movie was the music. And even in the trailers where they had Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Swede in both of the trailers, it was cool. Like, it was really cool. And I was like, oh, okay, it's, like, funny. And they have, like, funny music. And it's going to be, like, a spunky movie. No one was really prepared for how beautiful it was going to be. Beautifully it was going to be used in this movie, and how it drove these themes home about, you know, like I said, family, love, acceptance, what it means to belong, and what it means to have a purpose. And all of those themes really stuck with me. And, you know, I could talk about this movie endlessly. You know, I watch the movie probably once a month. It's my favorite film ever. Is it truly the best film to ever be made? No way. There's better movies. But for me, it's my absolute favorite movie, and no movie will ever make me feel the way Guardians of the Galaxy does in terms of, you know, this amazing film that just really speaks to me and puts a smile on my face every time. And that's another testament to James Gunn's directing, because as amazing as all these Marvel movies are, for me, you know, I can't speak, you know, maybe someone feels the same way about Iron Man as I feel about Guardians of the Galaxy. But for me, these movies are fun and exciting and amazing, and they, of course, have the Marvel, you know, the Marvel moral center, but none of them have really been these touchstones or these milestones in my life that mean something. But Guardians of the Galaxy broke through that vibe that I was getting from the Marvel movies of, okay, we're here and we're having a good time, and it's amazing fan service, but these are all part of a greater whole. So the thing that sticks with me the most about Guardians of the Galaxy is, you know, there's one 2-minute scene that ties it to the larger Marvel universe, but as a whole, Guardians of the Galaxy is its own movie, and that's amazing. Like, I can watch that movie whenever I want and not have to worry about being interrupted by setup scenes or, you know, teasers for Avengers 2 or anything like that. And it's seriously, like, the greatest movie I've ever seen. That you guys gotta go see it. So that's me gushing about Guardians of the Galaxy. When we get back from a really quick break, I'm gonna talk about the effect on mainstream media and then hype you guys up for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So I'll see you guys when we get back. Welcome back, everybody. This is DJ Powers. I'm between the panels with radio.dominican.edu, and this is our last like 6 minutes together, but it's going to be a beautiful 6 minutes. So, what have the Guardians of the Galaxy done for the world at large? The Guardians have gone from being complete and utter nobodies, and I say that lovingly, to being Marvel household names completely overnight. So Star-Lord, Groot, Rocket Raccoon, Drax, Gamora, they now all hold as much importance as Marvel staples as any one of the Avengers. And that's pretty amazing. You know, that's like one of the most amazing success stories in the whole world of comic book media, to be completely honest. And it's done this great thing for movies where if Iron Man was the catalyst for comic book movies, Guardians of the Galaxy is the catalyst for comic book movies that nobody thought they could ever make. So now we're seeing a lot of movies that are going to come out that are just like, oh, I never thought in a million years that they could ever make that. But, you know, it makes sense because Guardians of the Galaxy took a group of characters and this idea that no one thought would be a thing, and they really turned it into something beautiful and something amazing and a big worldwide phenomenon. So Guardians now have merchandising, they have video games, cartoons, and they're even getting a freaking ride at Disney. So Twilight Zone Tower of Terror was like the most popular Disney ride for a while, and because Disney's deal with the owners of the rights to Twilight Zone is done, Twilight Zone is getting taken down anyway. So people are blaming Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's not Guardians of the Galaxy's fault. But to fill the void of the Twilight Zone, we're getting a – it's going to be the same style of ride, like the drop up and down thing. But it's going to be Guardians of the Galaxy themed, and I'm psyched out of my mind. It's like insane. I could not be more – oh, I'm going to drive. I'm going to have a road trip. I'm going to make a road trip out of this. I'm going to drive down to Disney. I'm going to get on this ride, and I'm going to smile like an idiot and buy all of the merchandise on my way out. And they have me – hook, line, and sinker as a sucker for Guardians of the Galaxy. So Guardians are on top of the world, and that is definitely exemplified through the upcoming second film. And I could not be more excited for this. James Gunn is perfecting his vision with the Guardians, where he got every single first choice for music again. So the two songs that we know for a fact are going to be in the movie are The Chain from Fleetwood Mac and Come a Little Bit Closer by Jay and the Americans, and I'm really excited because they sound really good. And he gets to do the movie that he wants, because last movie there was probably a total of maybe like 5 minutes of the whole two-hour movie that is set up for other movies, and that's fine. I know that he, you know, as a director, is beholden to the rights that he signed with Marvel and everything. But surprisingly, Marvel said, hey, you know what, dude? You don't have to do a single thing. There's going to be no setup. Just make the movie you want to make. So Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is just going to be a pure Guardians of the Galaxy movie. All the cast is back. James Gunn is back. Nicole Perlman, who was like the big co-writer in Guardians of the Galaxy, is back. All the music's back. We have new characters. Mantis is going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy. Yondu is joining them. Nebula is going to be on the team. Kurt Russell is going to be the movie. Kurt Russell is the star of Big Trouble in Little China, which is my favorite John Carpenter film. And I'm going off on a tangent because I'm pumped about this movie. And Sylvester Stallone's in the movie, of all people. We don't know what he's doing, but I don't want to be spoiled on Sylvester Stallone's role. I want to have him pop up in the movie and have me be completely surprised but completely happy that Sylvester Stallone, Rocky Balboa, is in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 comes out May 5th, 2017, and you can bet your bottom dollar that I'm going to be in line for the very first premiere, and I could not be any more excited than I am right now. Actually, that's not true. Once we get more ideas of what songs are in the movie, then I'm probably going to get even more excited. I'll make a playlist on Spotify and everything. I have a theory that Here I Go Again by Whitesnake is going to be in the movie, because this is just me nerding out and having like crazy nerd speculation. But James Gunn tweeted a photo a year ago on set of his director chair, and it said, Here I go down the only road I've ever known. And that's a Whitesnake line for that song. And that'd be sick if we got that rock song. So clearly I'm really excited about Guardians of the Galaxy. I really appreciate that you guys let me gush about that movie today. I could talk about it for 5 hours if I had the time, but I unfortunately do not. But we got plenty of hours together over the past couple of weeks, and I'm really glad that we took this ride together. I hope that Between the Panels was an awesome introduction to the world of comics for you. This has been DJ Powers with radio.dominican.edu on Between the Panels, where we talked everything comics all the time. And I will see you guys one day again soon. Excelsior, true believers. Never stop being amazing.